Hello there. You're about ready to listen to a very special sneak peek of our Patreon-exclusive show, Spider-Versity. This is the show where Sal from Comic Pop and myself explore every aspect of Spider-Man media, including every Spider-Man movie, even the spinoffs like Venom and Morbius, and now Spider-Man the Animated Series. So if you enjoy this episode and would like to check out the rest, you can do that over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Spider-Versity. This is the show where we talk about Spider-Man. This is where Sal from Comic Pop and me, your host DJ Wooldridge, talk about Spider-Man. Today, we're talking about Spider-Man, the animated series, season 5, episodes 2 and 3, and of course, to officially kick off our season 5 coverage. We started last week, but this week, we have a very special guest. Hassan, say hi to the kids at home, and if they're not familiar with your work, who are you and where can they find you?
Hey guys, I'm Hassan Kader. I'm over with Sal at Absolutely Marvel in DC, us in Comic Story, and we talk about just about everything that you talk about here at Only Stupid Answers. And then personally, I did those weird Mickey Mouse puppet videos reacting to stuff. That's awesome. Don't watch that. That's great, but don't watch it. I also have a commentary channel called Bad Days Pod where I just discuss things that nobody wants to for hours on end, and it's my livelihood. But yeah, lovely to be here.
So when you're talking about stuff people don't want to discuss, give us an example.
Okay. This week, yeah. So there's a college that's like right down the road from where I live, and yeah. They recently invested in a state-of-the-art podcasting room.
Okay.
Well, because of that, this is a very rich Christian private school.
Great.
Over 30 podcasts from just very privileged, boring people popped up. Mm-hmm. So I took it upon myself to listen to those podcasts, review them, and break onto the campus to show you that podcast room in person, to see it from somebody else's eyes. And it's the biggest project I've ever done, and for what purpose? I don't know. We listened to 10 hours of podcasts. I think we covered maybe 3 episodes, and at that point we're like, we're nearing 45 to 50 minutes of show. We might need to just cut all of this.
Yeah.
So it's got a lot of information in the back burner here.
It's weird that colleges have podcast room. I think there was like an Abbott Elementary episode recently that was like, we're going to do a class on podcasting. I was like, that seems like a waste of time.
It's what a waste of money. Popular. Like, you can just watch a YouTube video.
And I discovered, so like a lot of those podcasts are sincere, like true to form, like I want to be famous, so I'm doing a podcast, whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of them are for a class. And I didn't realize that until, because they don't say it until episode 2 of every one of these shows. So I don't even know whether it's like a for a show or for a class podcast, whatever. And then you listen to the podcast episode and they talk, they're college people. So they talk about like partying and drinking. But the school they go to has one of the strictest morality clauses just in the nation, to the point where like you get in a lot of trouble for getting a DUI. Obviously, you have to pay a huge fine. Right. But if you at a college with dorms are found out to be having sex, you are that fine is doubled. And if you're found out to be having gay sex, that fine is also doubled.
Wow.
Quadruple the fine.
Wow.
Of the DUI.
Wow. That's bold. That's a bold. That's bold. That's like the rule. Like when it's not even like secretly. No, it's like that's what we're telling people.
It's like, hey, well, gays, listen. No. Not here. Not today.
I can tell you, having grown up in a conservative religious community, full of hypocrites. It wasn't until like I went to college that I was like, oh, wait, all of you. I did the thing. You all told me the thing to do, and then I did the thing because I thought that's what we were all doing. And it wasn't until I got to college I was like, oh, you were all lying to me.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Why did I do the thing?
And the crazy thing is they're not that aware. And I'm finding this out through this podcast because I think it's like their stream of consciousness. So they'll spend like the first 30 minutes of podcast talking about partying, manipulating men. One woman beating a man severely, apparently. So that was crazy. Just goes on this tangent. And then at the 30-minute mark, it's like, but the real thing I wanted to talk about today
is Jesus.
It's literally like, it's like, I think the reason, this is a real quote, for all the depression on college campuses is because we're not living fully for the Lord.
Yeah.
And then they talk about all depression rooting back to not fulfilling Jesus's infinite purpose. It's incredible.
Sure. And listen, I don't want to make it clear, for me at least, I am not, I personally, I know like Hellbent's coming out, and obviously that's it's a very irreverent comic. I am not against belief systems. But I am against that intellectual dissonance of like, because that's the thing. When I was growing up, the preacher was like, you should go home and read the Bible. And apparently I was the only one that did it. Like, I was the only one that like,
what is this book?
Well, because then you come back and you're like, wait, this is not, you guys are saying one thing and this is saying
another thing. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. So I don't know what's going on here. And it is, yeah, it's wild. It's wild. It sounds like a fun video. Everybody stay tuned for that. Wait, once it comes out, where can they find that again?
It's going to be at youtube.com/baddayspod. It'll probably come out on Saturday. If we're lucky, I'm working around the clock. And for those of you who followed DJ for years, SourceFed, another SourceFed spinoff, Sugar Pine 7, to film the segments where we break onto the campus, we definitely filmed it as an homage to Sugar Pine 7. So it's a very like Steven Suptic voiceover, whatever kind of little thing. So you get a little SourceFed love there too.
There you go. There will be links in the description. So stay tuned for that. And now listen, we all love a good tangent on Spider-Versity, you all know. And so here's another one. As of this recording, the new Spider-Verse trailer came out.
That's true.
And I do feel kind of obligated to talk about it on our Spider-Man show.
I think
Sal,
that's right.
Let's start with you. Did you see the new Spider-Verse trailer?
I did see the new Spider-Verse trailer. And yeah, it looks good. It doesn't look like the quality diminished in any way in terms of animation.
Yeah.
I feel like I could guess by the numbers exactly how this movie's gonna roll.
Yeah.
Like in every way. Like I've got the twist. Yeah. I've got the
hero has to choose between a family member and saving more lives. Oh, right? And also it doesn't help. It's a part one. I wonder where we're gonna break the movie.
You might make the wrong choice at the end of this one. I don't know what's making me feel like that's gonna happen.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna end our part one with like, oh no, you did the right thing. Everything worked out. to be continued.
And then the third movie just slams headfirst into the next movie. There's another one. I don't know.
I think I'm with you, Sal, in that, listen, it looked beautiful. I'm very, obviously, voice cast is incredibly game. Loved the first one. And I'll just say this for me. I don't need to project on anybody else. For me, I am mentally preparing that this one is probably not going to rock my socks off like the first one did. And it's kind of unreasonable for me to expect otherwise, honestly.
Exactly. Yeah.
So,
wow. I love the tempered expectations.
Hey, listen,
you will not be disappointed in the slightest based on how you've just projected yourself.
Yeah, you go in with low expectations because, like, listen, you like Spider-Verse, the first one won a goddamn Oscar. It was a superhero cartoon that won an Oscar. That's what we're talking about here, right? And in like Sal said, it's just one of those like you see like there's that. It's like, oh, this is what we're doing. All right, and I don't know about you all. That opening bit, we see a little bit with Miles just doing his day-to-day Spider-Man stuff where his parents are at a school meeting and he's having to fight the spot.
Yeah.
And then they introduce the multiverse stuff. I was like, time out. I'm actually way into this just Miles doing his thing bit. I think he got something here.
That's like a pattern in the Sony Spider-Man movies lately, right? Where it's like, oh, I really liked that idea. There it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, it'll probably be great. It's just, you know, the first Spider-Verse was like lightning in a bottle. But Hassan, what about you? How did you feel about this trailer?
Oh my God. It looks incredible. I'm having to stop myself. I think this is it for me. I'm not gonna look at any more marketing material for this movie. I'm out because I want experience on screen. I remember when Into the Spider-Verse came out, we were in like a Spider-Man renaissance as far as releases were concerned.
Yeah.
We had Spider-Man Homecoming immediately followed by Infinity War and the Spider-Man PS4 game and Into the Spider-Verse and then Avengers Endgame with Spider-Man. And then we had Spider-Man Far From Home, and it was pre-pandemic. So it was just this little pocket where it's like Spider-Man's the guy again, which he's always been the guy. So we're kind of almost in that pocket again. We're potentially getting another live action Spider-Man next year. We're getting an animated Spider-Man this year. Spider-Man PS5 is coming out soon. So we're like back in the renaissance of Spider-Man, and I couldn't be happier. This year I watched A Spectacular Spider-Man for the very first time, which is crazy that I didn't see this yet because I am a Greg Wiseman stan. Young Justice is my favorite show of all time. I'll argue to the ends of the earth about how great that show is, and Spectacular Spider-Man did not disappoint and how incredible it was. So I'm just like, I'm hyped up for Spider-Man again. Yeah. I love the little Dr. Verse and that nerd from Earth 199 line. Yes. That sounds great. It confirms it. And everyone's like, oh, the Earth distinctions are different. I was like, man, who cares? We know who they're talking about. There's exactly people in spandex everywhere. Don't worry about it.
That 100% awesome. Says to me, by the way, the fact that the Sony verse designated the MCU as the comic book numerical designation and the MCU designates it as the comic book designation, like their 616 for whatever reason, and coincidentally Quentin Beck just guessed that the right number. But I'd put some money down on this. There was no coordination with Feige and Marvel to make that Doctor Strange reference. They just put it in as a kind of like just like thunk.
So do you think we're not going to see those? We're not going to see Tom Holland's maybe voice.
You can't. I don't think they need to clear that with Feige to put Tom.
Oh, they
Holland
can do that.
There.
Yo, no, yeah. I don't. Yeah. I think we're going to get all three Spider-Men in this movie.
Yeah. Yes.
I just don't think there's any coordination anymore with Marvel and DC, Marvel and Sony when it comes to like.
Well, it's practically Marvel and Marvel. Iman Vellani on every red carpet arguing about Kevin Feige not knowing the distinction is hilarious.
Well, but I would also like to point out, I think somebody pointed this out, that in the original Spider-Verse, Peter B. Parker is supposed to come from 616. So technically, they're all wrong.
Everybody's wrong.
And I actually kind of feel like that would be true if we did know about multiverse. They would always be incorrect about which universe is which. It reminds me of I think the best time travel movie of all time is a movie called Primer. Don't know if you've all seen it.
Oh yeah, Primer.
But I love about Primer is that it really spends a lot of effort to make time travel as grounded as possible, and it is still a major plot point that the second you do it, everything basically goes off the rails. Like it becomes impossible to keep track of anything.
Yeah.
And I think that would be the thing with multiverses. It's like which number, whatever. Who gives a shit?
We're gonna throw back to a show that I don't think is very good now, but back in the day, we all loved Flash. In season 2 of The Flash, they introduced the multiverse, and they have another version of Harrison Wells, who on Earth 1 was Eobard Thawne. And Barry's like, well, this is Earth 1. Where are you from? He goes, from my perspective, this is Earth 2. I'm from Earth 1. Mm-hmm. And they say it, and then they obviously throw it out the window, and everybody has their numbers, and the Council of Wells, and the show's terrible. But for a shining moment, they did acknowledge that. So yeah, let's just take it from that perspective.
It's also like I've been going back and watching Star Trek: The Next Generation and Best of Both Worlds. It's the first time there's a real big Borg confrontation, and they're like, they're heading to Sector 001, which is where Earth is. So it's like, whoa, who decided that? Wow. Do the Vulcans acknowledge that Earth is in Sector 001? Like, who?
I think
that sounds like a very human distinction.
I believe that 100%. That's one of the few things I'm like, where Earth was like, no. So we're number one, right? We're gonna make ours the center of the galaxy. And the Vulcans are like, it would mean so much to them if they just were number one. So let's just let them have it. Like, that is so in Vulcans, wheelhouse. They're like, just let the Earth.
Yeah, they'd be like, who cares who gets the first number? All right, sure, you guys can have it.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, I don't see why we need to make numerical designations whatsoever, but it really seems to matter to you guys. So sure.
There we go. Okay. All right. Now, all that said, let's talk about Spider-Man. Let's talk about Spider-Man, the animated series, season 5, episode 2, The Six Forgotten Warriors, chapter 1, original air date September 19th, 1997. Aunt May finally tells Peter that his parents were Russian spies. To prove their innocence, Peter heads to Moscow to find answers. Meanwhile, former World War II scientists are beginning to disappear. I feel like that was more cohesively explained in the synopsis than it was in the episode itself. I can't wait to we're very quickly, we'll get to one of my favorite bits about all these episodes. And I don't know about you, Sal, because we've mentioned a couple times and I had forgotten the series covered it. I was like, oh no, we're doing the fucking spy story. God damn it.
Yeah,
God,
which I know you love, because I know that's one aspect of Peter Parker's character that you are just a huge fan of, the idea that his parents were secret agents.
Is this... Listen, I know there's going to be clone haters out there. They're going to be like, no, Clone Saga, worst story. Is this the worst Spider-Man story? Spy parents story?
any story that is about his parents is a terrible story. Whether they're life model decoys or artificial life forms or evil, spies, they're all boring.
The greatest narrative purpose they'll ever serve is death. Be dead. Yes. Don't talk dead. About it. I don't care what you did in your life. You died when he was real young. He was raised by his old grandmother, aunt-looking lady, and Uncle Ben. That's all we need to know.
No, we need them to get out of the way so he can be more sad about Uncle Ben dying.
Well, and I think this also comes from, like, because I think something we don't do well culturally is, like I remember when the Jurassic World 3 trailer came out, and it was a and the scene is a packed drive-in theater watching, I think, The Exorcist, Poltergeist, something, some movie from the 80s, and a T-Rex attacks. And it's like, even when Colin Trevorrow was a kid, drive-ins were not packed. We're pulling for his nostalgia, for Steven Spielberg's nostalgia. It's the same thing with, like, the new It movies, where it's set in the 80s, but they're making references to stuff that would have mattered in the 50s, which, again, is Stephen King's nostalgia. Exactly. So I think, like, we got to remember, Stan Lee, we're not even pulling when Spider-Man was created. We're pulling from when Stan Lee was a kid. There was probably a lot of kids he knew whose parents just died for whatever. They just were dead. Parents were dead.
Because people would just die. Spies and double agents for the Soviet Union.
When Stan Lee was a kid, you got a bad cold, you were probably going to die. So it was probably, the kids died, parents died, everybody was dying. It didn't matter there was probably a lot of kids being raised by their aunt and uncle.
It wasn't weird that, like, Peter was raised by his elderly aunt and uncle.
Yes.
And that they, like, lied and said they were his aunt and uncle because they're clearly, like, 30 years there, his parents' senior.
It's either they were his parents' aunt and uncle, because, you know, if you've ever had a great aunt and uncle, you don't call them great Aunt May. They're Aunt May. But also, life expectancy was, like, 58, all right? So, like, maybe they were in their mid-30s. Who's to say?
They didn't wear sunscreen. You know?
Exactly. Times have changed. So, anyway. These episodes, by the way, all of them are written by John Semper, showrunner exclusively. Showrunner of this show.
Spider-Man, yeah.
And it's interesting that he decided this was his baby. This was this five-parter. Does Secret Wars get five parts? No. Does our early proto-Spider-Verse get a five-parter? Uh-uh. Six Forgotten Orders? Yeah, baby. That's the one.
Yeah, this guy needed to get involved. He's like, this is my story. This is my Ahab. I'm like, dude, fine, I guess.
Yeah.
I'll skip them. I'll skip these episodes forever.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be weird here. I didn't know that they'd ever adapted outside of The Amazing Spider-Man 2, the parent storyline. I thought that was that's why I thought that movie was so horrible, that, like, Sony made up some nonsense to make Peter's parents more interesting. They did that? Other people made adaptations? I'm watching this and I'm like, no way. Other people thought that this was good, and then they watched this, and then they put it on the silver screen too.
Yeah.
Well, that's another thing that you'll see if you check out more episodes of Spider-Versity here on DJ's Patreon. But
patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Thank you, Sam.
There you go. I'll tee it up. this is the blueprint for every cinematic adaptation of Spider-Man.
Yes. Like,
clearly, what happened was, anyone at Sony, also, you'll notice Avi Arad's name is plastered across everything.
Oh, it's like a jump scare when I see it. It sends chills, like, down my spine.
Anyone who makes these Spider-Man movies goes, all right, so we want to get back to basics. We want to make it like the comic books, but I will be damned if I have to read. So I'll just watch the cartoon. Mm-hmm. And they do. And so they're like, okay, every cue for every character that we ever use in the movies will be from this effing cartoon.
And I love that the Amazing Spider-Man's people's instinct was, listen, this is a serious movie. We're not going to make his parents spies.
Okay.
We're just going to make it that his dad experiment was the scientist and he was working for Oscorp. And now Peter's kind of a weird, it's a chosen one type situation.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a lot. It's going to make a lot more sense. It's like, all right. Mm-hmm.
Once you see his secret subterranean lab made out of a subway car.
Hey, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen in those movies. That's like Ninja Turtles level secret Ninja Turtles stuff.
Yeah.
Secret place.
Yeah.
And you know they exist. Look, Sal, you're not far from New York. You know that they have, like, little areas of old subways that are blocked off, and we don't know what they're doing in there.
We don't know. Listen, it's a plot point. Slight spoilers. It's a plot point in the new Mario Brothers movie, Secret Subterranean. Listen, the plot of the new Mario movie is basically 100% the plot of the 1993 Mario movie.
No! That's all I need to hear. That's all I need to hear. I'm going in ready for the greatest experience of my life.
Okay, so we're following an old man who gets into a taxi that's also a jet. We go to the Shield's weird version of a helicarrier that's in these cartoons.
City? It's,
yeah, it's more like the one in Black Widow, whatever they're doing over in Black Widow. That's what this is.
Flying castle. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So Nick Fury greets this person as a commander, and we find out he must stop May Parker from is unclear. Having watched these episodes, I'm still not entirely sure what we were trying to stop May from doing.
We wanted a cold open. We wanted a fun stinger. It was just like the most dangerous woman in America is Aunt May Parker.
Is Aunt May Parker.
And, by the way, really quick point. I'm a stickler for voices, and I'm always you gotta, they changed the voice. I think she died. They needed a new Aunt May. I think it sticks out like a sore thumb. I'm like, you didn't earn this. This is finally Aunt May's time to like act. Yeah. And the woman effing died. And so they had to replace her. That sucks. Like that Aunt May has never been given any good material for the whole damn lifespan of this whole show. And then they finally give her like, there's maybe she's going to fall in love with mustache guy. Yeah. She has to like protect Peter from the horrible secret of his parents. Uncle Ben was tasked with a secret that she has to keep. This woman is burdened with secrets and it's given to like the understudy for Aunt May. And I'm like, damn it.
I watched the show very actively growing up, and now that I'm looking back, I think I had to have been watching the same like 10 episodes over and over and over again, because in my brain I watched so much, but like I didn't recognize any of what I just saw like genuinely. But Aunt May seemed off, and I couldn't put my finger on why. I was like this is just a weird show now. The pacing is insane.
Yeah,
so we get we introduce Silver Sable for the first time in this. So she gasses a different old man who has a laser cane. And that guy is, we cut to J. Jonah Jameson gets a fax. Love it. Yeah. He gets a fax about a German World War II enemy scientist. Oh, wow. What could that mean? What is a German World War II enemy scientist?
I don't know.
They exert so much energy to avoid using the word Nazi in these episodes. And in some ways, I almost appreciate it. It's like, I wonder if we just didn't acknowledge it, if it wouldn't be a problem, if it wouldn't still be a problem. Like, I have a working theory that I think we can kind of lay some of the blame for some of our current issues at the feet of George Lucas, because he just made, between Indiana Jones and Star Wars, he just made Nazi de facto bad guy. But there's nothing specific about what they're doing. We don't get into specificity of what makes them bad. They're just bad guy. And so edgelords on the internet that wanted to like, oh, I'm edgy, I'm bad, started calling themselves Nazis and then found out what that meant and then retroactively started believing the things Nazis believed.
I think I don't know about that. I mean, like, listen, there's also the other element, which is, of course, like the proliferation of the World War II video game and the fact that like shooting Nazis was the easiest. It was like you could either or Nazis.
It's robots or Nazis. But in Call of Duty, you could also in multiplayer play as a Nazi.
That's
I think culturally, I said George Lucas, but I think culturally in our cultural pop culture, it just became Nazi bad guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but they were bad for a very series of specific reasons.
Yeah, the Imperials, it's okay to be like, the Imperials are bad guys. They shoot in white uniforms. They have a rod up their butts. But like the Nazis, it's like, there's a very specific reason why they're bad.
But also, truth be told, and I think you this is worth acknowledging as well, if you look back at American history, there's a reason that like when you look at World War II media, they always seem more mad that the Nazis are Germans. As Americans, we don't necessarily disagree with anything they're doing. We're just mad that they're Germans. And it's like,
I remember as a teenager, I remember seeing this old Donald Duck propaganda picture that they made during World War II. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called it's called like something like In the Fuhrer's Face. There's a whole song that they sing. But the whole thing is about like Donald Duck basically has a nightmare that he woke up in Nazi Germany. Yeah. And he is like, put through the ringer, and he's surrounded. And it's like their way of portraying Nazi Germany was like all of this nationalism and all these like all this iconography of Nazis and like flags and logos and stuff like that. And then he wakes up and he's like, and he says through his broken English, of course, he says that he's really glad to be waking up in the United States of America, and his room is equally decked out in American iconography. And I'm like,
wait, this is, it goes back to the intellectual dissonance as I was talking about earlier with the Christian, like, wait, do you not, hold on,
the parallel.
Like, there was the Blue Beetle trailer dropped this week, and we had a hilarious line from George Lopez saying Batman is a fascist, and it's so funny. Everybody, like,
it's funny because it's true.
It's here's the thing. So there's no question to me that a like 58-year-old Hispanic man would think that Batman is a fascist.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense.
Or at least make a joke about it. But people are like, that's.
There's one person in particular that his blow up has gone viral, and it was just him being like, Batman's a fascist, really? And then he like insults several marginalized groups and people and yells a lot.
Yeah,
and he just has like a whole tantrum about it.
What does
it
say about me?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's kind of and of course that's been Alan Moore's point the whole time. It's like not only are superheroes childish, but they're also inherently fascist, and everybody gets mad. It's like, but he's not wrong. He is, and that's why most of the adaptations of Watchmen suck, because they can't reckon with that. Like, it's either Zack Snyder who's like, superheroes are fascist, and that's fucking awesome. I think that's great. or you get Damon Lindelof like, oh, we don't need to reform superheroes. We don't need to abolish superheroes. We just need to reform them, but blue no matter who. And it's like, well, again, you're missing the point of what Alan, whatever. Anyway, we're not talking about Alan Moore's work. It's great.
No, we're here to talk about the Spider-Man cartoon.
Which was a Spider-Man cartoon that refuses to use the word Nazi.
I think that that's like I don't like it. Like, the one thing I wanted to say about the whole, like, you know, they don't say Nazi, they work around it. It's funny because 30 years ago they were like, oh, we gotta tiptoe through the tulips with this cartoon show.
Yeah,
I mean, this is the first episode we saw with bullets in them, and it's been five seasons. Every two-bit hood in the city has a laser pistol,
has a laser gun, G.I. Joe laser gun,
right? But in the 50s they had bullets, and it's like, you know, Semper, because he was the showrunner, was like, I'm putting bullets in this episode because it's the 50s and it wouldn't be believable they had laser pistols. That's how we show the past. But I get why, because they every single studio note that this show got, they were like, yes, okay, no problem, change. And so they're like, oh, can we say Nazis? Can we soften it a little bit? And now, 30 years removed, we're doing the same thing, but for completely different reasons.
Yeah.
Like 30 years ago, we were like, don't say Nazi. That's really harsh. And that's a lot. Like, it's too scary and violent and like and real for this cartoon show. Now they're like, don't say Nazi because you'll offend the percentage Nazis of our population that is Nazi.
Be really careful, don't throw out the term Nazi. People in the comments will get real upset. It's like, why are they commenting?
Don't out yourself, you Nazi.
Listen, if you're gonna get upset with me being mad at Nazis, go fuck yourself. And I just want to, just real quick before we get off this point, I do want to share the stance of this show that Nazis are bad, not even just because, but this is a huge part, that they were genocidal anti-Semitic maniacs, which is really bad. But also, if they were only just fascist, would not be supporters. I would not support them. I don't support fascism on this show, so fuck them. Anyway, we're talking about this German World War II enemy scientist. JJ is like, I remember when this scientist he's talking about was big news in the 40s, and it was like, how old? This show's in the 90s.
How old
is J. Jonah Jameson supposed to be? He's gonna be 75. Yeah, because we found out the cat was a kid during World War II, and he's like, whatever, doesn't matter.
He's older than Jameson.
So Peter has mixed feelings about, we cut to May's house. She find out she's selling a house, and Peter has understandably mixed feelings. He's like, I grew up in this house. And Anna continues to be a raving bitch, because she's like, I can't believe Peter's making this about him.
I forgot how much I hated this woman. This woman is the prototype for like half the misogyny in the world. I feel like this woman just made me insane. It's like the writers from Everybody Hate Chris took notes from her to write Rochelle. She's so awful, and for no reason all the time.
Missed opportunity not having her hook up with JJ. They would get along great.
Yeah, their Afterglow conversations would be amazing.
Kingpin wants to go after the scientist. Basically, what we're going to find out is that this scientist is connected to this Doomsday Project that connects to the Red Skull. This is all leading to the Red Skull, everybody. And so Kingpin decides he wants the Doomsday device. And for some reason, he needs Chameleon to do it. So all roads eventually... And this is there's a long-winded... This episode is called The Forgotten Warriors. And we know in the future that this is talking about World War II heroes. But the show exerts way too much effort trying to convince us that the six Forgotten Warriors are the Sinister Six.
The Insidious Six.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you for that correction.
Down packed in comics.
No, the worst of it is, Hassan, they already were called that in 1964.
Yeah.
It's just that in this cartoon, and I promise you this is the reason, even though I have done no research to support it, the note was, does it have to be sinister? That's kind of a violent word. Can we make it like something a little more, a little less alliterative and a little less violent?
Yeah.
Like every single
Insidious?
Scene.
Insidious? That's not bad.
Insidious. Kids don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I thought that was a specific thing that I kept thinking. I was like, wow, that's weird that they're choosing to go this route.
It's super weird.
What were you gonna say, Sal?
I was gonna say it's super weird that any of these idiots would fall for this again, because like this is the third appearance of the Insidious Six, and each and every single time Kingpin screws them hard, and they go never again, and they take off their AT&T headsets and they throw them on the ground. And they just show up. They just bypass the arguments they might have had. Like Doc Ock himself is like, "Yeah, let's go." And I'm like,
"Let's do it."
What are you even doing here? Like, why doesn't Doc Ock want to be the Kingpin? I don't understand.
Exactly. Yeah. Listen, everybody else does. Hobgoblin wants to be Kingpin. Fucking Prowler wants to be Kingpin. Is why Doc Ock should take a shot at the crown.
He was master
planner.
Bowl
cut. He's got a crown of his own.
It's true. Good point. I got to say, weird instinct in the 60s and 70s when all this stuff was being created that we need teams with the number of people in them, because it's very limited. The Fantastic Four, Sinister Six, you're painting yourself into a corner. You know, I think Avengers, you could have any amount of people part of that team. Yeah. So I'm just throwing that out there. Legion of Doom, they could have 25 members. There's no limit.
Legion sounds like a lot.
You need to have a lot. So I'm going to call them Sinister Six for the rest of the episode. I'm not going to bother with the Insidious shit. Peter's helping May pack. He literally trips over his parents' passports, which sends May basically into shock, which is weird. You'd think she'd just get rid of him. She would just, if it was that big a deal, she'd just throw him out. This leads to mustache guy from the beginning. We find out his name Keen Marlowe.
Thank you.
I
never bothered to learn it. I was like, no.
He shows up. We find out that he's connected to the parents. It doesn't matter. We'll get it. No. Basically, this all eventually leads to Peter. Why does he go to S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters after? How does this?
He follows him. He's trying to.
Yeah, Keen Marlowe's goes on his space taxi back up to S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters. Spider-Man follows him. This is where he overhears Nick Fury say that his parents aren't Russian spies. And Peter's like, wait, does that mean people think that they are Russian spies?
They
just revealed this in the weirdest possible order.
Yeah. Which, by the way, if nobody knows, why does it matter that when he's like, people need to believe they're Russian spies? Who's people? Who believes this?
Red Scare, communism. They're like,
if it's not like public information to the point where Peter knows, mission accomplished, secret sealed. What are we
more serious about the communism part? That way we get to like, we get to the Aunt May scene, and Peter's like, wait. My parents are dirty commies?
Yeah.
And he just like really leans into it and like the propaganda of it. That's crazy. I thought they fought in Vietnam. It's like a whole other thing.
He does. Yeah. He does say like he is fiercely national. And that comes up routinely. And that's why he's like, no, it's not enough that no one knows that they were Russian spies. It's that my parents, people that are related to me, might have betrayed the ideals of this nation.
And that
hurts my soul.
All I know is that one of the greatest shows we've got in the last decade or so is The Americans, the FX show The Americans. And we're quickly going to, which for those that don't know, is following Russian spies in America, undercover in America. And we're quickly going to a world where everything's so IP driven that the only way we get a show like Americans is if it's Peter Parker's parents. If it's Peter Parker, it's like Batman's butler, Alfred, coming to, Cinemax? What was the, Flix, Real Flix or something.
Somebody asked us if we were watching that like in a comment once. I was like, dude, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I literally responded. That's how I replied to the comment, and I didn't say anything else back. I was like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Why, Alfred? No.
I don't have time for that shit.
Pennyworth, the origin of Batman's butler on
there you go. That's what it's called. Thank you. Okay.
Oh,
so,
Epics. It was on Epics.
Epics. Everybody's favorite network, Epics.
Yeah. You can watch that, or you can watch the Ash versus the Evil Dead show on, what was it? Stars?
That was the Stars, but a lot of that stuff got folded into Warner Brothers.
On, yeah, that actually went onto like a real network eventually after.
Yeah, I think Ash vs. Evil Dead is on Netflix now, which is great, and that show is great, and I highly recommend it.
Phenomenal. I can't believe how well they pulled that show off. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a good, completely unrelated to this, good show, go watch. I'm excited for the new Evil Dead movie. So the Sinister Six attack the space base while Spider-Man's on it. They're about ready to kill Spidey. Fury shows up. Classic shit, right?
Yep.
We find out that the Sinister Six has a cloaking device that they use to like escape from S.H.I.E.L.D. They ditch Spidey. And Peter goes home. And this is where May reveals that his parents are spies from Russia. Mm-hmm. So Peter decides to go to Russia. And he points out, he literally says, how am I going to get to Russia? We barely scrape by with my freelance money, which made me go like, wait, does Mary Jane not have a job?
I mean, she doesn't seem to. She just walks around in the same clothes all day going like, Peter, I love you. So, yeah.
Hey there, tiger.
She's like a trophy wife for a broke dude is what it is.
Yeah, we also don't really get into the whole, like, they live in that crappy apartment that we set up in the Prowler episodes.
Yeah.
Like,
we just know they don't live with May.
We know they don't live with May. We don't see them at home. They never actually change their clothes. And it's really frustrating for me because, like, they don't really seem married. They just seem like the same relationship they had before they were married.
Yes.
Where she's like, hey, tiger. Like, she's in a doorway somewhere. And I'm like, didn't you come here together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are you not? Hold on. So Spidey goes to JJ, and he, in a truly spectacular series of bullshitting, he is able to convince JJ that Spider-Man is going to take over the world from Russia, which convinces JJ to foot the bill to send Spider-Man there to take, or Peter to take pictures of Spider-Man.
Yeah,
over
it's
there.
That's pretty funny. Yeah,
that's it's a good enough idea.
It's rough.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, okay. All right. JJ is especially delusional in this episode. I guess
in this
he's also
one especially like he's a real idiot in this one, and it's like Semper hasn't written an episode in like a season or two. So he's like, I don't know. He just makes JJ, you know, freak out. And then Robbie's like, "Yeah, me too."
Robbie mysteriously and suspiciously decides to go along. I don't know that we ever adequately pay off what Robbie's involvement is in this.
He's friends with the
not
other
in these two episodes.
No,
he's just keeps saying, "Oh, this is my old friend from the olden days of the back times." It's like, Robbie, what is the fear here?
He's
there
like
a phone call that he got, and that like or he called somebody, and that teed everything up. And I still don't know who's on the other end of that phone.
Spoilers. Yeah. We'll find out later that he's connected with the World War II Six Forgotten Heroes, but I don't know that adequately explains his involvement. I don't know what he's doing for them
right
here.
I think it's just that he heard, like, he knows the other guy. Like, he knows the dude who was in Star Trek II.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Sure, man.
Well,
you know.
Maybe we're fast forwarding a little bit, but when Peter and Robbie meet the family or whatever, I'm like, are you Peter Parker? Parker, it's such an uncommon last name. You must be Richard and Mary Parker's son. And they start telling him stuff, whatever. Robbie doesn't react.
No.
Like, does Robbie know this already?
Yeah, is Robbie already informed that the Parkers are all right, whatever.
It's funny there, too, because, like, Robbie was there. Like, Robbie's like, hey, don't slow me down, kid. I'm doing something. Like, Peter Parker, that's the secret we need to get in the room. And, Robbie, you can stand by and just watch what's happening. Like,
He's
just suddenly not involved in any way. And it's like, man, you're lucky Peter went.
Yeah, it's wild. So Robbie is trying to ditch Peter. He goes to some Russian guy. I don't know this person's. He's important to the Doomsday plot. Yeah. Silver Sabre kidnaps the guy and leaves behind a bomb. That is our cliffhanger that leads us into Season 5, Episode 3, The Six Forgotten Warriors, Chapter 2, Unclaimed Legacy, originally airing on September 26, 1997. The Kingpin reunites the Insidious Six to find information on a mysterious group called the Six Forgotten Warriors.
Yes.
Ooh. 13 months before I was born.
I was going to make out parties during this during the airing of this movie.
We're all at different stages when this was originally airing. So we start on a shot of Russia just to remind the kids at home where we are. Robbie defuses the bomb because I guess he was part of the bomb disposal service.
He does. Yeah, Spider-Man's like, this is too big. I can't like throw it in the air.
Yeah, I can't do my amazing spider power, which, by the way, they get very loosey-goosey with how strong Peter is or is not in these episodes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a scene later where Kingpin just muscles his way out of like holding cell.
Metal
like,
bindings.
Wait, and then, is Kingpin stronger than Spider-Man? Is that what we're saying right now?
That's what we're implying here. Or yeah. Peter just being lazy. Also, Kingpin could have broken out at any point and just like sat there for like probably an hour waiting for everything else to happen. Yeah. I'm going to sit here and wait. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have one thing, and maybe you guys can explain this to me. So the spider sense in the show isn't to help you. It's just so you know before you get hit, but not to stop you from being hit.
Yeah.
Because they do it. It's this incredible, iconic scene every time where it's like the noise is great. The visual is great. And then he always gets hit by the thing.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't ever dodge it. Like the whole point, like the Peter Tingle in the MCU is that, okay, he's capable. He's sensory. He can dodge. He just like, my spider senses are going off. Oh, shit, I'm about to get rocked.
Yeah.
He always does. I think it's because they need to keep kicking the can down the road. Like, it's just, we can't ever have Spider-Man be capable at all. He has to, like, literally, there are so many episodes of this show where characters would just do well if, like, the episode would be over if anyone behaved like a normal person, or if, like, but it's always, hey, give me this box. No, I'm not going to give you this box. I get the box. I drop the box. They take away. They leave. They go to a lair. Yeah. Spider-Man goes to that lair. The repeat scene. Three mm-hmm. times, one episode.
Yeah, well, because we got... I do think, Sal, what do you think? I feel like this is some of the least recycled animation we've gotten in a while.
It's sad because also it's very bad. But at least it's not, like, reused. Every explosion is definitely from season one.
It's from season one. Also, there's at least one scene with the six where they're charging that this is all from the individual episodes that they showed up in. Like, suddenly, Matt Gargan, who has not been depicted with his, like, lizard mouth situation since season one, suddenly has it again for this one frame of animation.
Yeah.
Sure. So we find out Robbie defuses the bomb. He got rid of bombs in Vietnam. Also confused with why he's friends with so many Russians, because I will bring this up multiple times throughout the episode. I am not necessarily a historian, but if I recall, Russia and the U.S. were on different sides of the Vietnam conflict. So we find out Silver Sable is working for a man that is clearly in Red Skull in a mask, although that does get complicated in a hilarious way later. All I'm going to say is it must be gamey underneath the mask, underneath the mask.
Doesn't make any sense. That's the dumbest thing I've
ever Scooby-Doo seen. It's Scooby-Doo shit. Anyway, yeah. We're not there yet. So Robbie takes Peter to meet this detective friend that has a ridiculous fake Russian accent. Basically, oh my God, he gives him information. The police chief is really not happy about it. This leads them, they're trying to find this German scientist who is hiding out with Russia, which again, not a historian, but what little I know of history, that's fucking baffling that a German would go and hide in Russia. Like, I guess maybe I just feels like Iron Curtain era. Maybe it just feels like a weird
feels like places to go. You know?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. Most Nazis go to like Switzerland or Brazil or
they
something.
Went to, like,
anyway,
Argentina.
Yeah.
Yeah. Argentina, Brazil.
They went to the tropics or they worked for the United States, you know? So we go to the scientist's daughter, I think, is that what we establish? And we get a flashback where the scientist is meeting with Parker's parents about the doomsday weapon. Yeah. Long story short, this reveals that Peter's parents are actually double
agents.
Wait, well, okay, this is a good
not even double agents. They're just
triple
like,
agents.
Yeah, this is a good time for us to pause and try and suss out what exactly were the Parkers doing. So the Parkers were working for the United States, pretending to be Russian spies while being U.S. spies, and the United States wanted and SHIELD wanted to cover this up because.
Well, the Spider-Man, they have no reason. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. There's no tracking. Like, I don't know. I think they just wanted to use Nick Fury really badly for this. Like, they're just like, they needed to bring him on there. And
I mean, I get it. I like Nick Fury. I like Nick Fury. Anyway, whatever. So Robbie shows this ring to the woman and has a Roman numeral 6 on it. She talks about the 6 warriors. They get attacked by the chameleon disguised as her husband. This leads to a chase where the chameleon runs away as the chameleon. And Hassan, to your point about the spider sense earlier, Spider-Man, and this is actually kind of he's like, wait, why is he running away as the chameleon and not disguising himself? This must be a trap. I'm like, oh, good job, Peter. And then he just walks right into the trap.
Oh, he's like, I gotta be ready for this trap. And I'm like,
I'm gonna go from above. They'll never see me coming. You're Spider-Man. That's what you do, Peter.
Yeah, and then Vulture just comes in and beans him on the head.
Right.
Oh God.
Good job, Pete.
Just a rough time.
So,
do you remember the voice actor for the Spider-Man?
Yeah,
Christopher Michael Barnes. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite. It's just like such an iconic voice, and it's one that my ears. It's so familiar for me to hear, and I love it. I know he played like Spider-Man 2099 in a game or something like that.
Yeah.
Later down the road, just to reprise the role of Spider-Man again, but it's crazy how much I think of Spider-Man when I hear his voice, but then I watch the show and I'm like, what am I watching?
Well,
if you listen hard, you'll hear his voice at least one or two more other times in this in these like episodes because he's
he plays his dad, right? He plays.
I couldn't tell. Is he playing the dad? They just changed his voice a little bit to play
so
the dad.
Good. I think so. Yeah.
It was so good that I would be shocked if it was somebody else.
He's just an incredible actor.
Okay,
so he gets attacked by the Sinister Six. He goes right into the trap. Spidey's surprised. He's like, the Sinister Six here. And it's like, yeah, dude, you just saw the chameleon. They're clearly in the previous episode, they're clearly after the same thing you are. Why wouldn't they? Whatever.
I mean, it is convenient that like everyone's in Russia. Like it does like it, I would be weird. It would be weird if like my like best friend was in Russia somehow.
Surprised that we didn't do that for any of the home trilogy, that he doesn't spend a movie out hanging out in Russia. We'll get there. Here. Don't worry.
Spider-Man me at way home.
Yeah.
Like stuck there.
They take him to Kingpin. Once again, classic Spider-Man lays on the fat jokes. He's like, if I were you, I'd lay off the treats. It's like fucking every time, man. Every
I fall for them every time. I'm always like, ha ha.
Kingpin talks about he wants to use this doomsday device to take over the world, and Spider-Man's like, world domination, you sound like a Saturday morning cartoon villain. Yuck. Kingpin is about to unmask Spider-Man when the Wild Pack show up. I feel like they do this like 3 times in these episodes where somebody's about ready to unmask Spider-Man.
In this show, it's happened so much, you can go like, it's really more about like, who's going to come in? Like, if Spider-Man's about to get his mask off, you're like, who's going to enter the room?
And I just wish, it made me wish that, like, every time this happens, they actually do succeed. It wouldn't work for Ock. Actually, it wouldn't work for Ock being there. But it'd be funny if, like, every time somebody's about to unmask him, and they do, and they're just like, I don't know who this is.
That's like, there's a line in there that's like, if it wasn't for his cameraman friend, Peter Parker. And I was like, dude, what is this? No, don't know who he is. Do never know the celebrity Peter Parker. Like, don't make him famous. He's nobody. Just go with that.
Yeah.
Or we do Parker Industries.
It makes it easier. So Kingpin, Wildpack comes in. Spider-Man wakes up, trapped with the Sinister Six. Sable reveals that one of the six is a traitor, and Kingpin's like, who could it be? It's like, who could it be? You're in Russia, and you have a Russian guy that it's literally his job is to change his face and be a spy. Oh, man. Maybe it's Rhino. No, man, it's fucking Chameleon, you idiot.
Yeah.
Anyway... Kingpin, this is what we're talking about. Kingpin just sheer forces his way through the things, and it's like, wow.
Incredible.
Wow. Did he take the super soldier serum? What is...
Right?
Now, I don't know about you guys, but I was not a huge comic book reader back in the day, and I was never big on Daredevil until the later years. This is my Kingpin. Like, yeah, this is right. When I think Kingpin, this is the only iteration that, like, immediately comes to mind.
It's not bad
at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When it's one of the few times because the joke earlier that, him being a Saturday morning cartoon villain, truly, you know, we were talking about the laser guns being like G.I. Joe. Kingpin is the Cobra Commander or the Megatron of Spider-Man, the animated series. Like, he yeah. is the He's villain the of, the show. Of the show.
Absolutely.
To the point where, like, since there's rumors that Daredevil Born Again, he'll be running for mayor or whatever. And it's like, I truly do think it's not a one-to-one, but since Marvel doesn't have easy access to Norman Osborn, it's like, if you're going to do a Dark Reign story, it should be, you can do Wilson Fisk. And like you were just saying, so many people grew up with Fisk being operating at this level, saying that he is, like, controlling an international criminal empire and he is an Avengers level threat is not beyond the realm of there's precedent set for it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'd be okay with that very much. People associate Kingpin with both Daredevil and Spider-Man even now. He should definitely at least be the villain of the next Spider-Man movie if you put Daredevil in that Spider-Man movie.
Well, like, and the reason Vincent D'Onofrio has to, like, every couple months there's a quote of like, yeah, I want to fight Spider-Man. The reason he has to answer that question is because of this cartoon.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, that, if this cartoon didn't exist, he'd be a Daredevil villain, basically. Like, that true. Would be, yeah.
And to less great impact, he was the opening villain of Spider-Man PS4. Certainly wasn't as cool design-wise,
I think also, again, because of this, because of this animated series, I felt like that's why they felt the need to. And it's a good escalation. They try to do this with Batman a lot, too, where it's like we start off with normal crime people and then escalate to the Jokers and the clay faces and everything. And this is one of the areas where I think Marvel has a leg up because they do have kink, but like Batman doesn't, like Falcone.
Yeah.
Sort of like they don't have a kingpin that's like our top level street level criminal.
No, certainly not one that could go toe to toe with Batman. You know?
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so Kingpin unmasked Red Skull, another quote unquote the German war criminal Red Skull.
Which war, Spider-Man?
Yeah, which war and what made him a war criminal? What was he doing that made him a war criminal? What were the specific actions that were taken?
He was evil.
Yeah.
He did dastardly, derelict things.
He worked for the Germans and were the United States. That's what made him bad. Dude, that was a thing. I want to say, Mario movie's coming out, and I want to say that I should look this up. It was I always wondered as a kid, like, why are a Japanese game company making an Italian plumber? And apparently they had like an Italian janitor that they based Mario off of. And I was like, an Italian janitor in Japan? What does Italy and Japan have in
right.
All right. Well, moving on. Anyway. So Kingpin unmasks the Red Skull. So we pull off the mask to reveal Red Skull. Then he pulls off the Red Skull mask to reveal that it's the chief of police, who is actually the son of the Red Skull.
Yes.
This guy self-destructs the base. Spidey saves the wild pack. They all barely escape. And they're in Chernobyl, and everybody kind of fucking freaks out about, like, oh no, radiation. Anybody who hasn't watched the HBO show Chernobyl should. It's a fucking great show. So the Kingpin and his crew take like a plane.
Yeah,
like there's a plane.
He has like, I have one over there. And they just get in it.
They just get in it and
Silver
leave.
Sable's plane. Well, Sable had the plane and they took it.
And then Spider-Man looks at Silver Sable and they're like, we should leave. Cut to Peter Parker's just on a plane leaving Russia. And it's like, well, wait, but how did they get out of Chernobyl? All right, whatever.
I don't know. Yeah. I always picture Chernobyl as, and it's because I know nothing about it, as like a dilapidated bomb site. And this is like a regular plant just that exists in this world that is normal. And it looks kind of clean, relatively speaking, for it being the most terrifying place to be.
Well, it's interesting about Chernobyl now. I don't know what it was like in the 90s. You know, obviously there's tourists that go there, which I don't recommend. But nature's kind of thriving there and everything because radiation's fucking weird. And it like moves around in like bands. It's not like the whole space is evenly radiated. And it's also not that you would necessarily know, based on what I understand, that this spot is radiated and this spot is not. It's just the radiation just kind of moves around.
Right.
It sounds like a goddamn nightmare, honestly.
Yeah, totally. They made a whole book about it. Yeah.
I'm glad that the nature is thriving there and doing great. Good for them. Anyway, so Peter and Robbie fly back to NYC, and Peter reveals to May that his parents never betrayed the country, and he wants to reveal it to the world, which doesn't. Also, does the world care? Peter didn't even know. So does the world care? And also, I don't think we pay this off in any.
We don't.
I don't know about you, Sal. I didn't skip ahead to the last episode. We're not covering it.
Me either.
So I don't know if this matters in the last episode of this five-parter.
I'll bet they pay it off.
Sure. Cool. But listen, that's it for this episode. Hassan, what did you think of these episodes? What did you think?
I mean, it was a good nostalgia trip to go back to something, especially after having watched what I think is probably the definitive Spider-Man cartoon as far as like legacy and world building and everything is concerned. Yeah. To go back to what I thought was the definitive Spider-Man cartoon and just be painfully reminded that the mind of a child is the greatest thing that you can have and that everything is amazing. Spider-Man was the Power Rangers were the Avengers for me. Yeah. And this was perfect. It was into the Spider-Verse and the pacing, holy things just keep happening. Yeah. And the same score loops over. I walked into the room and it like keeps happening over and over and over again. Yeah. But it was fun. It was fun to go back to something. There's a lot of iconic stuff in the show that led to so much iconography in the modern day. So, you know, lots of love for it. Voice acting's surprisingly good for something that makes no sense 90% of the time.
Yeah.
So
that's true. They're all just given their all despite not even know. They're like, is this, are you going to put this together? You know, I can imagine like season two, they're like, are you going to pull this off? By season five going, well, they're not going to pull this off, but whatever.
Yeah. Whatever. It's a good paycheck. Let's go home.
Yeah. Yep. Let's be done with this.
Let's go over to Warner Brothers, start doing for Animaniacs or whatever.
I know they ended up doing, what was that, the sequel series, which was...
Spider-Man Unlimited.
And that was, like, not technically a sequel, but they tried to market it as it and then, like, open it with the original music cues and stuff. And I remember being so angry because, like, how dare you take away from this perfect show? And, you know, now I can let go of that little feeling and enjoy Cheech Marin Green Goblin like everybody should in Spider-Man Unlimited.
Yeah.
If you don't know what I'm referencing, please watch just any episode of Green Goblin in that show. It's incredible.
Well, we might get there eventually. We're definitely not doing it directly. We're going to Spectacular after this show.
We need
a break. It's interesting. It's an interesting, and it's something that I don't know that fans of X-Men 97 have really reckoned with. Like, cool, it's coming back. It's like, I don't know if that show has aged as well as you think it has. And not to say that the new show is going to be a one-to-one. I'm just saying I wouldn't mind a new one.
they certainly weren't afraid to keep making new ones. You know, it was X-Men like 92.
X-Men Evolution, Wolverine,
and the X-Men.
Yeah.
You know, like,
which both X-Men Evolution and Wolverine and X-Men were pretty solid. We're pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's one thing I'm kind of. I wish they'd use Disney Plus to, like, no, don't do. What's it? Spider-Man Freshman Year and X-Men 97. Yeah. Like, do an animated universe. Like, do all the shit that you couldn't do in the MCU. Like, have a Spider-Man show, an X-Men show, a Fantastic Four show, an Avengers show. All at once, all happening at once, and they can all feed into each other. Yeah. Whatever. Nobody's asking me. Anyway, before we go, Sal, where can the kids find you?
Oh, kids, come on by youtube.com/comicpop or compop returns. And I'm also, you'll find me probably almost every day with Hassan on Absolutely Marvel in DC.
Hell yeah. Hassan, where can they find you?
YouTube.com/baddayspod, at Hassan Kader, YouTube.com/Hassan Kader. It's all the thing on Twitter at Hassan Kader, and at YouTube.com/absolutelymarvel and DC.
Hell yeah. Check all that out. You can find me in DJ Talks Trash. If you want to watch, if we decided to drop this episode for free, which we might do because it's the beginning of a new season, and you want to listen to the rest of our discussions about Spider-Man the Animated Series, all the Spider-Man movies, including Venom and Morbius, you can do that over at Patreon.com/OnlyStupidAnswers. Not only that, but Sal and I have a new show that we're doing monthly where it's basically this show, but we're doing X-Men. So we're starting with the very first X-Men movie. We did kind of like a pilot, a backdoor pilot, or it's just a pilot.
Yeah.
Talking about Pride of the X-Men, the unaired animated pilot. So check that out. We'll be doing that live at youtube.com/OnlyStupidAnswers every third-ish Wednesday. Is roughly how it comes out, but we'll stay posted. Follow us on Twitter. We'll let you know. Check all that out. Thank you for joining us. If you're a patron, we really appreciate it. We need you to keep the lights on, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.